couch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Neil Miller, and you are listening to Fat Guys at the Movies, back from temporary hiatus. In case you missed us last week, I'm sure you didn't, but...
In case you missed us last week, you missed us last week, because there was a catastrophic computer emergency at Fat Guys HQ in Magical Studio Sky.
Yeah.
Meaning, in other words, my entire computer system crapped out on me.
Yeah. For those of you who are wondering why the iTunes feed wouldn't work last week, it was working just fine. There just wasn't a show.
Yeah, there was nothing. There weren't computers for a while. It's just sort of like the recovery period on that. It used to be back in the day, you just get a new computer and you turn it on, you install all your software, and it all works.
Indeed.
Not in the days of, not now when they have a new operating system every year or two and then keep upgrading it to beta testing.
I don't sense any bitterness in your voice.
No.
Over the whatever operating system your computer is running. I'm sure it's some sort of Windows-based system.
Windows 7 64-bit, which 64-bit means, it's not going to run anything that ran before. So
fair enough.
Or it'll be clunky. I don't understand how you make an operating system better and then it won't run brand new programs.
But haven't you seen the commercials? It's like everyone's idea. Windows 7 my idea. Oh, so you're the one who decided to make it crappy.
Yeah, I want to know who the guy. Windows 7, my idea. I want an operating system that won't run anything that I bought in the last 3 years, that won't run YouTube videos, and that will crash periodically and then muck up your machine. That's what I want. That's mine.
So, there you go, Kevin Carr, everybody. Anyway, moving on to places you can find and connect with the chubby dudes at the movies. You can go over to fatguysatthemovies.com, and from there you'll find all kinds of feeds, including this podcast and other podcasts paid for by readers.
Hey,
let me just
spotlight one of the feeds we did, because even though we didn't have a Fat Guys at the Movies last week, we had a couple second reels. I did one with Shannon Hood from Frothy Girls about sort of like the midsummer, look at the midsummer box office. And I also did a Twilight for Dummies with Jen Yamato.
Very cool. I like Jen Yamato.
Yeah.
She's cool.
She gave us some nice insight. She was kind of sad to find out that you weren't going to be on the show. She's like, is Neil going to be here? And I'm like, no. She's like, oh.
Hey, sometimes you have to disappoint a lady or two.
I guess you're
okay.
It's
kind of my MO. sweet. Well, yeah.
But yeah, if you want to know what all that... Yeah, if you want to know what all the nonsense about Twilight is, check it out. She actually wraps it up really nicely for somebody who's a fan, you know, explaining.
Yeah, she's probably one of the more level-headed Twilight fans I've ever met. But then again, she's intelligent person. So,
yeah.
Moving on, you
take
can
that,
also,
Twilight fans.
You can also get us on iTunes. You can go and subscribe to us. It will update every time we publish a show, which will be this week. And you can rate us. You can subscribe. You can do all kinds of funky stuff. You can email us, fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com. Very simple. You can leave us a voicemail, area code 614-388-8735. Or you can get us on Facebook, just search Fat Guys in the Movies. You can hit us on voicemail, 614-388-8735. Did I already say that?
Did we just go into a time warp or
something? Yeah, we just looped. You can get us on Twitter.
We did that
Twitter
twice. We didn't give it to you last week, so we thought we'd give you the phone number twice.
Yeah, phone number twice, because... You really need that phone number. But you can get us on Twitter. I'm twitter.com/rejects. Kevin is twitter.com/KevinCarr. My brain is fried this week because we just launched the new Film School Rejects. So
it looks awesome.
My brain is totally fried because I have no idea what's going on. But thank you. I'm very happy with it. So people should go check it out. It's got a lot of really good articles not written by me this week. So there you go.
It's got some articles written
by
my Boxer's
really cool
co-host,
stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've got Meryl Barr from the Idiot Boxers doing some TV reviews over there. We've got a lot of cool stuff. I did a set visit with the movie Red, which we're going to talk about later when we talk about Comic-Con. And our guy Dustin Hux did some very cool stuff with the junket for Inception, which we're going to talk about in the next segment.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that is up over at Film School Rejects. Plus,
I don't know what that last comment I made was. I think I must have been possessed by the devil or something like that.
Fair enough. All right, so moving on to films of the week, we've got two big ones coming out. One is a big fancy Disney wizard movie, and the other one is a big fancy movie about dreams and stuff from Christopher Nolan. So lots of big fancy things happening this week. But we start with The Sorcerer's Apprentice, in which Jay Baruchel becomes an apprentice to Nicolas Cage, a sorcerer trying to keep evil at bay.
You are going to be a force for good and a very important sorcerer.
What?
All over the world, dark forces are gathering. You've been chosen to stop them.
Shock!
Let's go train. Every sorcerer needs a nice pair of pointy shoes.
These are old man shoes.
Excuse me?
I love them. A lot.
You didn't get a chance to see this one, did you?
I did not, and I'm actually kind of sad because this is one of the... other than Inception, which we're going to talk about in the next segment, this is one of the few movies left this summer that I was like, yeah, that looks pretty good.
Really? Okay.
You know, and I looked at it and I was like, sure, Nicolas Cage, ridiculous hairdo, his, you know, normal Nicolas Cage performance, and Jay Baruchel's hit or miss with me, but to think about Jerry Bruckheimer and John Turteltaub, who, you know, call them a team of that wallows in mediocrity with the National Treasure series, those movies are fun. Wow. And Jerry Bruckheimer also spends a lot of money on his films. Even Prince of Persia, while it was kind of a crap story, looked cool. So I was thinking, well, yeah, Jerry Bruckheimer's going to make wizardry look cool. So I was kind of looking forward to this one, and very sad that I had to miss the screening of it.
Yeah, well, it opened on Wednesday. You can take any time during the week to go see it.
Yeah, when I'm not doing a million other things, I'm going to go see it.
Oh, whatever.
I'm going to do a double feature of that and Despicable Me, because I heard Despicable Me was good. But we'll talk about that
Despicable
later.
Despicable Me is awesome. Yeah, we'll talk about that in the next segment, or the later segment. Sorcerer's Apprentice was... Here's the thing. It's inspired by the Sorcerer's Apprentice cartoon from Fantasia, where Mickey Mouse, played by Jay Baruchel,
where Mickey Mouse has to brutally kill a broomstick at the end.
Yeah, so they have that nod. They have to have the broom scene where it's flooding the thing. Here's the thing: The Sorcerer's Apprentice is not made for grown-ups. It's made for... the best way I could describe it is if you saw The Haunted Mansion. You know, it does for wizard movies what The Haunted Mansion did for horror movies for kids. I mean, it's made for a younger audience. It's made for, you know, maybe tweens and younger, because it's a little bit inconsistent story-wise. It has some good parts. It looks fantastic. You're absolutely right with that. And the effects are neat. And it has some inconsistent performances. It's almost like they didn't know whether they were trying to go serious or goofy. I was okay with it simply because, you know, it was a Disney sort of action. It's the Shaggy Dog, not the one with Tim Allen, but the one with Fred McMurray, that kind of lightness and silliness, but with a lot more special effects and everything. Jay Baruchel's okay. I'm not wild about him. Nicolas Cage kind of chews through the scenery, but you know, it's a fun family adventure. I took my kids. I enjoyed it. I didn't think it was fantastic, but it wasn't as sort of brooding and as. Like Prince of Persia was trying to be more grown up, whereas I think Sorcerer's Apprentice just said, "Hey, we're just going to make a family movie," you know, and they're not. I mean, it's not as like aiming as low as like G-Force, but you know, it was fun.
Okay.
It's a kind of rocks.
And with that, we will be back in a moment. And we have returned here on Fat Guys at the Movies. Kevin said The Sorcerer's Apprentice kind of rocks, right?
Kind of rocks.
Yeah, that's pretty good stuff.
I don't expect great things from it, but...
You know. I expected about that. I expected it to be a little bit of a slightly above average movie, you know? Mm. I don't know, it just seems to be a Jerry Bruckheimer thing, whereas movies nowadays, they just look good and
it's National Treasure with magic. That's really what it is.
Yeah, which is, you know, it's a fine experience, I guess, for the family audience. It's not going to blow you away. Which brings us to the next movie that we're going to talk about, which is Christopher Nolan's Inception. It is probably the most highly anticipated movie of the summer, and certainly one of the highest profile film we've seen since, I'd say, Avatar. So, and it stars Leonardo DiCaprio, who plays a man who has the ability to enter people's dreams and steal or protect their deepest, darkest secrets.
There's one thing you should know about me. I specialize in a very specific type of security. Subconscious security.
We create the world of the dream. We bring the subject into that dream, and they fill it with their secrets.
Then you break in and steal it.
Well, it's not strictly speaking legal.
Do you want first crack at this, and since you got to see it? You actually watched this one?
Yeah, well, sure. You saw it too, right?
Yeah, I mean, I can take first crack, or you can. It's up to you.
No, I'll start us off. It's interesting because I think for me, Inception was kind of playing against the expectations game because they're obviously it's a Christopher Nolan movie, and to me, he has not made a bad film yet. In fact, he's made several great films.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of hype, and personally, I had to sit down and edit Dustin Hux's A+ review for Inception that he wrote at the junket like 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I couldn't avoid having to read it because I had to edit it. So I was, you know, and it was very well written, and a lot of the early reviews came out, and I was like, oh, well, you know, this is probably going to be really good.
Okay.
It didn't necessarily knock me out of my seat, but it's a very, very well-crafted movie. And that's the thing about Christopher Nolan is he takes his stories very seriously. So it's a very hyper-serious film about, you know, humanity and reality and dreams and the ethical nature or unethical nature of, you know, stealing ideas and holding on to things and all this. You know, there's some very serious themes at work. He's also a very serious craftsman, so visually, the movie looks wonderful. The score is incredible. The performances are very strong. It's a very well-rounded piece of work. But I feel like the first, say, third of the movie, first act of the movie, was a little clunky and a little. It kind of rushed through a lot of things, and I can see where people might get a little confused. But I will tell you, the ending absolutely pays off everything. It's a great ending. I don't know. Some people might think it's cheap. I don't want to give it away, but it's a really, really strong ending because that's you don't realize until the last minute of the film that you're on the hook. You know, that you're really truly invested in the story. At least I didn't. I didn't even really realize that I was invested in the characters, that I was invested in everything until those last few minutes, and I was like, ah, they got me.
Let me address that real quick, and I'm not gonna no spoilers or anything
yeah,
like
of course
this.
Not.
But There's a part early on, and it's in the first act. And you know from the trailers that it's about people who can go into dreams, and there's people who can make things happen. You have different, you know, like the architect, and they have a scene where Leonardo DiCaprio's character is explaining to Ellen Page's character how it all works, and he gives her a piece of paper and he says, "Take 2 minutes to draw a maze that I need to, that I can solve in 1 minute." And that was, to me, a metaphor for the movie because Christopher Nolan took 2.5 hours to make a movie that I solved in about 20 minutes. This is the thing.
Well, and I think it's very, you're right, it's very, the story itself is very straightforward. And I think that's what threw me off is I'm like, no, I get it. Like, there's no twist to it. It's not this M. Night Shyamalan twist thing.
Sure it is.
But it still gets you. That was the weird thing to me. It was like, I get the whole movie. I can see where this is going. I can see how it's going to end. But when the closing credits hit, I was like, damn. You know?
Well,
like, God,
well, here's
got me.
What's funny is and I put this up on my Facebook page the day after I saw it. And I said, I finally figured out what bothered me about Inception. And then people are like, what is it? Because I had somebody also know on Twitter who said, I'm the first person that he's heard, a critic who's not like, gushing over the movie like it's the greatest movie ever, it's the best movie. You even had Cola Bias writing an article about how it's going to win Best Picture, which I think is kind of him being tongue-in-cheek anyways with early Oscar predictions, knowing how Cole can be. But I was like, And everyone's saying it's smart, it's clever, it's unique, it's different. And that's what bothers me, is it is in fact none of those to me. Because
no,
I've seen all the stuff done before. I mean, the twists, the changes, this sort of stuff, and these levels and all that stuff. And I'm like, I've seen all that. And I came home and I said to my wife, I'm like, I can name five movies off the top of my head that these concepts and these plot points were used before. So to me, it wasn't that smart, but it has this appearance of being very smart.
Well, I think it's just a very basic movie. It's a very well-made film. It's not a groundbreaking, aggressively innovative story that he's trying to tell. He's telling a very straightforward, very simple story, but he's doing it on a scale that is impressive, you know?
True. And that's the thing. It's a good movie. I enjoyed it. I kind of want to see it. I want to see it again. But yeah, like I said, there was nothing in it that, I guess, nothing wowed me about it. And I think some of the, because people are wetting their pants over this movie in terms of the critics. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's like got a 4 out of 4 from Roger Ebert, which he almost never gives out, and all this kind of stuff. I think, and this is just me kind of, this is a movie that's very hard to experience outside of the hype. And it's almost the opposite of what happened with Avatar. I mean, Avatar got a lot of good reviews, but people were very reserved with it because they're kind of like, they almost didn't want to jump on the bandwagon for Avatar. They didn't want to jump on the 3D Avatar CGI James Cameron bandwagon. Whereas conversely, I think everyone's all too eager to jump on the Christopher Nolan bandwagon. Mm-hmm. And put it in the context of this summer, where it's been just disappointment after disappointment after disappointment. I mean, you could arguably say, really, Toy Story 3 and Despicable Me are the only ones that were better than people thought, and then like Karate Kid did better, but everything else was, you know, dud after disappointment after after sort of okay. Well, so that then when this movie comes out, people are like, oh my god, we finally got a good movie. And I think that
Inception really is the first legitimate blockbuster we've seen this year. It is the first movie that feels very grand and feels very well put together, and you know, all the pieces sort of fit. It's a well-crafted movie, and everything else has had some sort of problem. Even Iron Man 2, there was this big third act problem.
There was Inception. There's a whole side story with Marion Cotillard's her story. I felt at times I was in a Twilight movie because of the amount of angst and whining that was done about that. The other thing I think plays against it, and it's funny, there's so much, if you were to take Inception in a vacuum, I think it would be much better than it is within the hype, within the gushing, and also in comparison to Shutter Island, which there's elements that are completely unpredictable to have happened, but there's parts of Shutter Island where I'm like, wow, they're literally playing the exact same card that was done with another Leonardo DiCaprio mind-bending movie earlier this year. And again, it's sort of this coincidental oddity of its release.
This stream of theme from his movies.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, I think you're right. It would be better just taken kind of in a vacuum. I think I was prepared. I don't know. I don't really know, because I wasn't expecting it to be this amazing movie, and in the end, I thought it was just a very well-made movie. It just is not the saving grace. However, it is kind of the saving grace of this summer, because it is probably the first movie that I can very confidently say you must go see in a theater. It is very cool in a theater. There's some really cool stuff in this movie. You know, it's a movie that's easy to recommend because it's incredibly well done.
And the score is
great. 10 out of 10, 100% four-star movie that you might be led to believe?
No.
You know, like any straightforward story, it's got its problems. But
yeah,
I have no problem saying that this movie is a very solid rocks.
Yeah. Oh, no, it rocks. It rocks. Then that's the thing. But it's kind of like when Transformers 2 came out last summer. There are people, the box office was just going crazy, and you had Michael Bay fans going, it was the greatest, it's awesome, it's just awesomeness awesome. And and I felt like this voice of reason going, okay, it's not that good. It was fun. It had some crap in it, but it was fun. Not to compare this to Transformers 2, it's a very different movie, but my point is I'm kind of like, oh, okay, people, slow down. It's not that good. It's a good movie, but it's not that good.
Yeah, well, and I think, you know, it's just good. So when we come back, we're going to talk about how good it's going to do at the box office.
Yes.
Miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck. Oh yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. As we were actually having debate, we talked off the air, actually spoiled, there was nobody to spoil it to. Neil and I were talking
to
about
each other.
To each other, since we've both seen Inception, we are debating about what actually happens at the end. So I guess it's not a straightforward.
It's an interesting topic. I'd be interested in maybe starting a thread on Film School Rejects next week after the movie's out about the ending. But I think we've come to the conclusion, though, just to wrap up our Inception talk, that it's really a good blockbuster. It feels like a very real, very good, very well-made blockbuster. And that's really the key, is whether or not you can see what's going to happen at the end or how the story's going to go from a mile away doesn't really matter. It's just a well-crafted movie. It's entertaining. It doesn't feel like it's 2.5 hours. So I think, you know, it's a very solid rocks. And we haven't had a lot of that this summer.
No. I will say one of the best parts about it was the score. It has a fantastic score. Although it's weird. Let me ask you this, because I saw it in just the theater I saw it in. This may have been sometimes the speaker system of the theater. Sometimes the score was almost too much. I couldn't understand what people were saying.
I almost felt like in our theater the center channel was low. And that might be a mixed thing if we both experienced it in different areas of the country where, you know, the score was very loud. However, interesting fact, did you know that Christopher Nolan did not let Hans Zimmer see the movie while he was scoring it?
Oh, really?
All he had to go on was the script. So, like, you know, normally when they score a movie, they have, like, the final cuts of the movie playing on a big screen so that the composer can compose to the beats of the movie.
Oh, yeah.
And it's very interesting. If anyone finds that tidbit interesting, there's an entire interview with Hans Zimmer over on Film School Rejects that Cole Bias did that is very, very fascinating. Very fascinating, dude.
That's really interesting because you know, going back to another Shutter Island comparison, it felt like the Shutter Island score, which Martin Scorsese doesn't actually have anyone come in and score his movies. He takes existing music, and he has a music supervisor. And you're right. It felt like there are these beats, and it didn't feel like if you listen to John Williams score the Star Wars movies or the Indiana Jones movies. He has it playing right under the dialogue, and it accentuates the lines. Whereas this one didn't do that, which I think that's kind of cool too.
Yeah, it's very neat. It's probably one of the better scores I've heard all year, just on its own. So
I do want to see it again, but I'm going to go and I'm going to fall asleep during the movie. That's my plan.
And see what you
just
pick
to see what
up.
Happens.
Maybe you were asleep the first time.
And this is the other thing, because there's one point in the movie where they explain that in the dreams things happen faster in a dream by a factor of 20.
Yeah.
So like if you fall asleep for an hour, it's really, and you go into the person's dream, it's 20 hours. Even though that doesn't quite. Because you only dream 30% of the time.
I know that there is a fact about your dreams that, like, you can feel like you've had a long dream. Like, you can feel like your dream lasted a day, but you were really only physically dreaming for, like, an hour
5 minutes
at night.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, haven't you done that where you've fallen asleep and, like, you're really tired and you wake up and it's only, like, 20 minutes later and you've had this
really long, intense,
extensive dream?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's, you know, it's a lot of it's pretty far-fetched, but some of it makes
I actually
sense
wanna,
the way the mind works.
I want to get in touch with my past employers, because of all the times I've fallen asleep at work, I am owed a lot more money. Because if I fell asleep for 20 minutes at my desk, that's like 2 days of work that they owe me for.
I guess.
Because I was...
If you can make that.
Anyways. I'll go check. I'll go call WorldCom and see if they...
Nice.
You'll give me any money back.
Anyway, time to move on to our box office segment, in which we tell you what happened last week and predict for you in our crystal ball what's going to happen this week. Last week, Despicable Me took the crown, right? Am I right?
Yeah. 60, well, 50-some million. They I was overestimating.
56 million.
They claimed it was because of the World Cup that they had such off numbers, which I'm like, that's just bullshit. you can't tell me that the World Cup impacted Despicable Me's box office.
Well, the weekend overall was 184 million, was up 2% from last week.
Yeah.
Last week's Friday, Saturday, Sunday's take, so it couldn't really be the World Cup, because the World Cup was going on last week, too. It's been a good month. Let's just say July has been a good month, thanks to Twilight. Now Despicable Me. Despicable Me came in first.
And holdover from Toy Story. Toy Story
keeps on trucking. Despicable Me at 56 million, Twilight at 31 million. Predators came in very strong at 24 million, especially for a movie that only cost 40 million to make. So that's actually a lot better. Predators opened kind of limited in only 2,700 theaters compared to like the 4,500 of Twilight.
That's kind of a middling, smaller. That is not a limited release. That's still a wide release.
It's a smaller wide release. Because, you know, your wide release is like 2,500 theaters.
See, this is what bothers me about the Predator stuff, is everyone sitting around making excuses for it.
It opened well. It did well. Don't tell me you expected Predators to make any more than about 20 million. And it opened 25.
I figured that's good. But to sit there and be like, oh, well, and it's also on 2,700. It still was in every cinema. It's just they weren't playing it on 10 screens.
You know, it was a lighter release. It opened in almost half as many theaters as Twilight.
Yeah,
there.
But that's it's fine. Twilight, whatever. But man, it's still 2,700 is a shit ton of theaters. I'm sorry.
True.
Okay. It's just your choice of words to say kind of limited. No.
No,
like 1,200 theaters.
It was a smaller wide release. It's still a wide release.
It's over 2,000.
Not the biggest. Toy Story 3 of note. Hold on, I'm pulling up the chart. I've got it here somewhere. Toy Story 3. Is now, as of our recording time, the highest grossing movie of the year.
Which is awesome.
Domestically, it is $1 million higher than Alice in Wonderland. So, very nice to see. In fact, it's Toy Story 3, Alice in Wonderland, Iron Man 2, and Twilight. So, it's nice to see a good movie on top of that list, as opposed to Alice in Wonderland.
Hey, I liked Alice in Wonderland.
It wasn't that good. Moving on to this week, we've got Inception is a pretty big release this week, and we got two big.
Is it more than 2,700 theaters?
Yes, it's 3,700. Still not as many as Twilight, though, for some reason.
I think it's good for 70 to 75.
I think so too, and I think you'll see a good 40 to 50 from Sorcerer's Apprentice, because that's another strong film. Yeah. And I think
we'll see how much the Wednesday opening affects its weekend box office.
Yeah, that's true. I think a $50 million is a good Wednesday to Sunday estimate.
I think 50 to 60 for the 5 days.
You know, it's a big Disney movie. It's being advertised like crazy, and Disney can get. I mean, what was the what did Prince of Persia do in that movie?
Not well. It did not do well.
It didn't do
terribly,
did it?
It did 30-some million. It went up against Sex and the City, too. I forget what... I think Sex and the City... Neither of them won. I think something... Whatever it was, I don't remember. It's not important.
Oh, Prince of Persia came after Iron Man, though. So that's kind of a tough spot to be in.
Well, I think Sorcerer's Apprentice is going to have a little bit of trouble simply because it's coming on the second half of Despicable Me, and that's getting great word of mouth.
Yeah.
That's gonna impact it a little bit more than anything else.
So, Prince of Persia still made 30 million. That's modest.
That's what I said. Yeah.
But so there's that. So Inception's gonna win. There you go.
Yep. There you are.
Cool. Okay. Time to move on to not one but two Fat Guy Fives this week.
Yes, really quick. The first one is five things we wanted to say last week, but we couldn't.
because we didn't have a show.
Because of disastrous computer errors on my end. The first one is Predators was just okay.
It was really, really... I had fun with it. You know, I know I gave it a very middling review, but I...
Yeah.
It's still, if you are a fan of the original... It's the best Predators movie since that movie. And if you've never really seen any Predators movies, it's not a bad way to introduce yourself to the
it's okay.
The franchise.
My biggest gripes, the only gripes that I had with it, first of all, I will give a little bit of love to Predator 2. I love that movie.
Whatever.
It was one of those, I was 20, you know, when I saw it. I was in college. That's my kind of thing.
Fair enough.
At the time, it was, yeah, you know, I mean, come on. It's like going, like you always talk about seeing Jurassic Park when you were like 10.
Yeah.
You know, that's same kind of deal. But what I didn't like, the things I didn't like about Predators was, first of all, it seemed beat by beat, almost at least for the first half, the same movie as the first one.
Which I really liked. The second one is, it was the second half of the movie that I didn't like.
Well, it comes with a screeching halt in the middle. You meet Lawrence Fishburne.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, yeah, this guy has a great pedigree of action sci-fi, and it just comes to a grinding halt. I mean, grinding halt. Mm-hmm. And then my third gripe is, you know, like when they made Aliens, you know, the first Alien had one alien, and then Aliens had like dozens. And so we had Predator, and now this one's Predators, and there's like four. I wish you were expecting this army of Predators. There's literally more Predators in Predator 2. Because when Danny Glover goes to the ship, there's like seven or eight of them in there.
Yeah.
This one, there's like three or four. So I guess technically it is Predators.
Plural. But, yeah, that's how that works. Technically is what matters in that case.
Yeah.
The second thing was Despicable Me was awesome. I still have not seen this movie, but have heard nothing but good things about it. Everyone tells me it's really cute. So
it's a fantastic movie. And if you try to describe it to somebody, you're like, that's the dumbest movie I'll ever hear. But then you see it, and it's really quite awesome. It's like Kung Fu Panda. That's how I really felt like after coming out of it. I remember you explained, yeah, it's a panda that learns Kung Fu, and it's going, and it was like, what? This is the dumbest, this is going to be the suckiest movie of the summer, and it was one of my favorites of the year.
Suckiest, that's a technical, critical term.
That is, yeah. Yeah, I think it's in the
dictionary. I'm going to do this next one, because you get the last two. The last two are a little bit more personal to you, I guess. Cyrus was uncomfortable, which is very, very true. Uncomfortable, but a very funny movie.
It is funny. It is funny.
I enjoyed.
I was a little disappointed that we didn't get to see Marissa Tomei naked, because she seemed to be making a habit out of that lately.
Yeah, she was almost there.
Yeah, not as much as she could have been.
What are the last?
I don't know how you're going to top The Wrestler.
Yeah, that's so true.
Then number four is 64-bit Windows 7 is terrible, just to let you know. Please,
yeah,
Microsoft.
Buy a Mac.
I would if I had four times as much money to spend as I did.
Save your money, buy a Mac.
Save my money in a catastrophic emergency, and I need one. Like, I need a computer that day. That was my problem. So I'm planning my next computer. Mm-hmm. And the fifth one is, I still don't know who put the bop in the bop, shabop, shabop. So there.
We were actually going to explore that in the third segment last week.
We were, but we didn't have a chance to, since this catastrophic computer.
Damn you, Kevin's computer. Yes. Moving on, I've got this next week. By the time we record next week, Comic-Con will be in full swing. And the team from Film School Redux will be down there covering it. I am not personally going, but Dr. Cole Bias, the angry man, Robert Fury, and interview child superstar Jack Giroux will be there.
I heard that Robert Fury will be giving away free nut punches this year.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what his strategy is and why he feels that that's going to work. But
well,
it's
they always
Robert
have
Fury.
Free hugs.
Everything
they
Robert
hugs,
Fury does seems to work pretty well, so it's hard for me to really argue with that guy. But I heard we have a ton of great interviews lined up, and they're going to be at all the panels.
Are we going to get more Unabomber videos of Robert Fury? Like
I don't know. I don't know how much video they're going to do this year. they have very limited video resources. So
I think 2008 was the best video year.
2008, those videos will live on in infamy. Yes. But, you know, we hope to someday, maybe next year, go back and do more cool videos. However,
tell you what, if you buy me a MacBook and pay my way to Comic-Con, I'll edit your videos for you.
Oh, yeah, it's that easy, right?
We'll just get right on top of that, right?
Anyway, I'm told there are a lot of cool plans in the works and a lot of cool stuff to see. So I have listed five things to look forward to from Comic-Con 2010. And if you're going to Comic-Con, this is a great list. If you're not going to Comic-Con, this is stuff to watch out for on Film School Rejects. One is they're screening Scott Pilgrim. So we'll get the first reviews of Scott Pilgrim versus the World, which is very
I'm going to predict that everybody at Comic-Con is going to gush over this movie and think it's awesome. It'll still only make less than $10 million.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, it's an Edgar Wright movie. I would see it, if I didn't know anything about Scott Pilgrim, which I do, and the comics are awesome, I would see it because everything that Edgar Wright has ever made has been awesome. So, you know, just on that principle alone...
I heard that in 1987 he made an omelet that really wasn't that good.
That's between him and whoever ate the omelet. But everything that I've consumed of Edgar Wright's has been grade A. Moving on. Green Lantern. First footage from Green Lantern is said to be there. Apparently, if you pick up Entertainment Weekly next week, you're going to be able to see Ryan Reynolds in the Green Lantern costume. This is kind of a big deal to people.
It'd be better to see me in the Green Lantern costume.
I don't think so. The Avengers movie, I guess, they're finally going to... The word on the street is that Marvel is going to finally confirm Joss Whedon as the director. And
they're
going to
confirm everything we already know.
And they're going to do a panel about with all the actors and stuff like that. And they're also going to announce who the new Hulk is, potentially.
Mark Ruffalo.
They're saying... right now the rumor is that it's Mark Ruffalo, that it's like the deal's almost done, which is fine with me. I mean, I don't care who the Hulk is.
I think they should have like Zach Galifianakis.
Speaking of which, two very good trailers are out this week with Zach Galifianakis in them. The one from It's Kind of a Funny Story and the one from Due Date with Robert Downey Jr. Both very funny. I would encourage you to go over to filmschoolrejects.com, seek those out. They have nothing to do with Comic-Con, though, so I'm moving on. Tron Legacy, which is kind of the feature piece of Comic-Con this year. It'll be the third year in a row that it's been at Comic-Con. It's kind of like District 9. It's like the Comic-Con movie. District 9, they had like the no human or no aliens allowed signs at the bathroom in 2007. And
that's why I couldn't go to the bathroom at Comic-Con.
Yeah, exactly. So Tron Legacy, they debuted that spec trailer the one year, and then last year they debuted the actual trailer, and this year... they're going to have a full panel with all the actors, and they're going to show tons of footage, and it's going to be really awesome and whatever. So that should be cool. And I've heard in San Diego right now, they already have Tron banners all over the street, so that's cool.
You know what would be awesome is if those little pedicabs that they have, if they made them like into light cycles.
That'd be cool.
Although, you know what?
They still wouldn't go very fast. Have you ever taken those
pedicabs? Well, yeah, but you know what? I had to do an event like in 2008. Out on that giant battleship they have out in the harbor, or whatever that aircraft carrier they had for a Stargate thing. And I was so exhausted coming home, I paid this girl who was a pedicab to ride me home. Best because, you know what, she was totally hot, and I could look at her ass the entire time.
Good job, Kevin. Kind of guy. You've just exposed yourself, essentially, to all
I expose myself all the time. And I haven't gone to jail
and
yet.
The final thing is this is the fifth thing to look forward to at Comic-Con is Summit Entertainment's panels. Two reasons.
Which will not have Twilight.
One is that there's no Twilight involvement, so Comic-Con attendees for the last 2 years have fought crowds of screaming girls. And finally it will go back to just t-shirt wearing, bearded, overweight, smelly dudes. And that is bliss if you're a Comic-Con attendee.
Why are you not going? Because you fit right into that category.
I know, exactly. But Summit is bringing two very cool movies, both of which I visited the sets of, which I'm very happy about because they were very cool set visits. One is Red, the Bruce Willis movie about former CIA assassins who are now being tracked after they've retired, and it stars Willis, John Malkovich, Helen Mirren as a former CIA assassin who...
Willis, you mean by Bruce Willis. Not Todd Bridges.
Yeah, not Todd Bridges. Morgan Freeman, Richard Dreyfuss. It's got crazy cool cast. Carl Urban, who I like a lot. And Drive Angry, which is the supernatural thriller in which Nicolas Cage plays a crazy badass from hell who is tracking a cult.
Hasn't he done this before?
And it's one of those like driving movies, like you know, getting your Chevy, whatever those cars were called, those really badass sweet cars, like the one from Death Proof, and drive it and kill
a
people.
A Nova?
And apparently it's going to be hyper violent. It's from the guys who did Nova. It's from the guys who did My Bloody Valentine 3D. So it's going to be hyper violent in 3D. There's going to be like blood splatter on the camera. And it's going to be just insane movie.
Can I just say something? Two funny things. First of all, Novas. My parents had Novas when I was a kid in like the late 70s, early 80s. They were not cool back then. Let me just tell you.
Well, yeah,
they,
of course. They're...
They didn't become cool muscle cars until the 90s.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I drove around in Chevy Novas, and they were shit cars. In fact, if you watch Beverly Hills Cop, they make fun of the crappy blue Chevy Novas in those. The other thing is, what's interesting about Red is when I went and saw the Twilight Eclipse screening, I took my wife, and they start and they do the preview. You see the big green card come up, and then you see the Summit logo. I'm like, oh, let's look at all the crap that Summit's going to release that's not Twilight. Mm-hmm. It's not going to make any money. And then it was Red. I'm like, hey, that looks kind of decent.
No, Red's very fun. It's based on a comic by Warren Ellis, and the comic is very grim. Like, it's very serious, and it's like like everything dies in the comic. And the movie's going to be an action comedy. And I think the way – it's one of those things like they took the comic and they kind of deviated way away from what the comic is. But the direction they went is very – potentially very cool. So, so I dig it. So check out the Summit stuff. I would – you know, and it's not just because they let me come onto the set of their movies. I snuck on anyway, so don't worry about it.
You shill.
Anyway, that's all we have to say about the Comic-Con. Check out filmscorerejects.com. There will be all kinds of Comic-Con stuff all week. All
right.
Next week. It'll be
fun. Well, we got to go to a break, don't we?
Yeah, we should go to a break, and then we should come back and do one more segment and then not have any more show this week.
That's right.
And we are wrapping you up here on Fat Guys and Movies. And at the break, we were talking about a trailer that we saw during Inception, the trailer for The Town, the new Ben Affleck directed movie that's coming out later this year.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. If you can track down the trailer, or if you just go see Inception, it'll pretty much take care of that. It's another Warner Brothers movie, so I'm sure it'll be attached to it, no matter where you see it.
Yeah.
Very good trailer, and I've discovered that that's kind of why I had a problem with the first 20 minutes of Inception. It's because I kept thinking, wow, that trailer for The Town was really good.
Nice.
I wasn't even paying attention to Inception. So maybe I have to see it again, but still, that trailer will be there. So maybe I have to see it again and show up just late enough to where I sit down right when Inception is starting.
No, what you should do is you should go see it, and when they start playing the trailer, put your fingers in your ear and go, la 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 la.
Interrupts. Yeah, that would be awesome. I can definitely not do
that. You should
that.
Totally do that. That would be awesome.
Moving along to other things that we need to talk about, because you've stayed with us this long, we should give you what you need, and what you need is the world-famous DVD Roundup. I've got a few.
I did too, because we missed it last week. I did too.
Yeah, we're working on we're working off of last week's list too, luckily, because this week's list is very light. And
No. Last week's was... Well,
last week's was terrible. This week is even more terrible.
I don't know.
Especially for me, because, you know, I usually just talk about Blu-ray, and Blu-ray has been abysmal the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
The only reason my Blu-ray report on Film School Rejects was so big last week is because I hadn't done one for a month, so I was, like, catching up.
Yeah.
So it was like all these movies came out a month ago.
Yeah.
But anyway, so last week, there are two titles that I want to point out from last week. Mystery Science Theater 3000, Volume 18.
That's this week.
That's this
that
week.
That came out this
quality
week.
Quality release.
Yeah.
By anything Mystery Science Theater related. Because I said so. The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, which is a rent at the very least. It's a very good movie.
It's
very
on Netflix Instant, too.
Yeah,
it's
very heavy, very complex drama. You know, one of those movies that, you know, like we were talking about Inception earlier, it's just a well-crafted film.
Mm-hmm.
And with very strong performances. It does have subtitles. It is Swedish. You'll get over it. Finally, another well-crafted movie, Adam Egan's Chloe, came to Blu-ray. Very good-looking movie. Also a movie that involves Amanda Seyfried and Julianne Moore having a little girl time with
something.
Clothes on a bed.
I've seen Julianne Moore. I could draw her breast from memory.
Well, and I think what's interesting is, and I wrote this in my Blu-ray column this week, is Hollywood doesn't know how to make really sexy movies anymore. You know, they can make movies with nudity in them or movies that are raunchy, but they don't make movies that really play to an intellectual... Like, there's this kind of intellectual stimulation that goes into building sexual tension. And
this
Chloe
is the cinematic equivalent of, like, I read Playboy for the articles.
No, there is a difference between making a movie that is raunchy and making a movie that is erotic. Than making a movie that builds proper
I'm
sexual
very
attention.
Uncomfortable listening to you talk about erotic movies.
But if you're into that kind of thing, just, you know, check out Chloe.
Are you going to mention Jason the Argonauts? Because that was last week. Did you get
that was
on
last
Blu-ray?
Week. That's a really good Blu-ray. If you liked A, like Jason the Argonauts, B, like Ray Harryhausen, and C, there's a really awesome commentary track with Peter Jackson on that movie.
Cool.
So very, very cool.
All right.
Definitely worth getting, as opposed to the new Clash of the Titans, which comes out later this month.
One I want to highlight from last week was ER season 13, simply because, you know, ER fans, you're finally getting to the end of the ER juggernaut. But yeah, box set came out this last week for ER season 13. This week, a couple movies. I'm going to just mention Greenberg. I wasn't a big fan of Greenberg, but it's a Noah Baumbach movie, and if you like that sort of thing, and it's Ben Stiller actually giving some acting outside of just a sort of Night at the Museum sort of thing. And also Insomnia is out on Blu-ray this week. I'm surprised you didn't bring that one up.
It's a good movie. Not the best Blu-ray release, but
it's okay.
I've heard somebody commented on FSR on my Blu-ray column saying that they got Insomnia for $15 on Blu-ray, and it came with a free ticket to Inception, which makes it totally worth it.
Oh, yeah. It comes bundled with a free ticket, yeah.
It's like, go see Inception, get the Insomnia Blu-ray for free.
Exactly. So that's worth... But it's also, it's one of those just, they've redone it for Blu-ray, and it's got, I think it's got the same special features from the DVD. There's also there's a collection, the Film Noir collection from Volume 8, which is I don't know if it's Volume 8, but it's the Film Noir collection, has 8 Film Noir movies from Warner Brothers. So if you like those, and then the best part of the DVDs for this week are all the TV shows. You have Psych season 4, you have White Collar season 1, which is a great little show on USA, about a guy who. An FBI agent who uses a white-collar criminal to help him catch other criminals. And then you've got Saving Grace, the final season. That's the show with Holly Hunter, the guy with an angel named Earl who is helping her out. And it actually has a very satisfying ending. I wish the show had lasted a little longer because it got canceled sort of prematurely. But, those are some good ones to check out. Stinker is SNL, the best of Tracy Morgan, because that's going to be really short because he doesn't do anything good. Review wrap up.
Yes, time to wrap up our reviews. We had 2 big ones this week.
Sorcerer's Apprentice is a kind of rocks.
Yes.
And Inception, I think we both agree, is a rocks.
Yes, is a rocks. What do we have next week? It's not here in my notes.
Next week is Salt.
Isn't there something else?
Yeah, Beezus and Ramona.
Beelzebub and.
Yes, Beelzebub. All right, we gotta go.
Time to go. We'll catch you next week.
Yeah, fatguysinthemovies.com.